All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Damn it, I just spilt my coffee, Tim. I got excited in the introduction. But thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks for being. I just percolated it. You know what I mean? I'll try to hold it up for the camera. It's just brimming. You can see it. It's frothy, and it's just all over my desk now. It's
you know, if you had said, oh, let's restart, I spilled my coffee, I would have said, no, that was perfect. That was funny. We're keeping it in.
It's just unfortunate. But anyways, thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate the support. I don't even have any napkins around me, too. So I'm just going to have to let it sit for 40 minutes, which is not great. Because I get bloody noses, and I just like, you know what I mean? They go like crazy. The consequences of getting in hockey fights is just the constant bloody noses. Or if you're someone who plays for the Colorado Avalanche, the nosebleeds are something else. Caused by something else, but we're going to not get into that. But thanks for joining us, everybody. Before we get into it, I just want to say this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropping the Gloves, and I really mean that. Really appreciative of them. You should open an account today with Bet365, and you can bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HockeyCA, and boy, what a range of betting ranges there were. The Oilers and Stars the last couple of games. Oilers jump out to a huge lead. The Stars are huge underdogs. You bet on the Stars, you hammer it. They come back and win. You win a ton of money. Last game, opposite. Stars jump out to 2-0 lead. The Oilers are going off at like, I don't know, 1,000,000 to 1, whatever the odds were. Jump on the Oilers. They come back, win 5-2. You win a ton of money. So the chances are there. And you can do the in-game stuff. It's a lot of fun. Bet365. Right, Tim?
That's correct.
Let's move on. I got some stuff I want to talk about. We've been jumping into hockey talk a lot lately, and I feel like people miss the updates for the chickens. It's almost bigger than me.
We get those comments a lot. I'm not joking. A lot.
And let me tell you what, it's been an exciting week. The other night I went out. Well, did I tell you the story? I was laying in bed sleeping.
Yeah. And you saw the fox outside, right?
There's been more news on the fox. Okay. So the girls have been seeing this fox in the morning, sniffing around. Yesterday, the fox came around and was trying to get into the enclosure. One of the chickens got so scared, flew out of the enclosure like a dumb chicken, just giving itself up to the fox. Luckily, the fox got scared away by my daughter, but we were having a heck of a time trying to keep this fox away. I am building right now. The excavators are there. One of the excavators is like, I'll get that fox for you. I'll take care of it. I'm like, how do you do that? And he's like, set some foot traps. Like, foot traps? He's like, yeah, foot traps. You know, like the claws. And snap. And I look at him in the eye. And it's this young kid. I'm like, do you not see these kids circling my legs right now? You don't think one of them's going to step on that trap? And he goes, oh, yeah, maybe they might. I'm like, well, what the hell are you thinking, man? Like, what? We should probably use a live trap then. I'm like, that's a better idea. Let's use the live trap on the fox when I have 7 kids zipping around. You don't think one of my kids is going to end up in that live trap? So we're going to put up a live trap, try to catch this fox, because it's not deterred by me. It's not deterred by anybody else, the kids. definitely not deterred by the trucks driving in and out of my property. This fox is persistent. It wants these chickens, Tim, and it wants them bad. And it's a big fox. So we'll have to keep you updated on trapping foxes. We're going to try to live trap it so it's very humane, and then kill it and then skin it. So that's the plan.
Then eat it. Why not get your guardian dog now? This is a good time. He'll scare all the foxes away.
No room. No room. We have no space at the end. We're jam packed. You've seen my house. People, if you were those of you listening, you'd feel sad for me if you saw my house.
The last time I saw Eleanor was a baby and she was still sleeping like in her crib. Like, and now she's got her own bed and you've got another one. So that's it's tight space there.
We stack them like stacks of potatoes just up to the ceiling. They're up as high as they go. Another funny thing I want to share. Eleanor, speaking of her, she had her like last day of school picnic yesterday. Her preschool kind of deal is attached to a high school. So the high school ran the picnic. They ran the games, the events. One of the events was a tug of war. The high school boys were running it. So they were, peacocking a little bit, showing off to the high school girls. And I said, all right, let's do this. So I get all my girls, five girls. There's 12, 10, 8, 8, and 3.
Your girls.
Your daughters. My girls, little daughters. And I go, all right, boys, let's go. We're tug of war. And first it was just one boy. We dusted him. Then he got his friend, two boys, dusted the two boys. Three boys, a little bit more difficult, beat them. Five teenage high schoolers were on the other side of this rope. My five daughters and myself. Tim, I've never felt so proud of myself after a tug of war in my whole life. We started pulling. They got the early lead. And then my kids gave up. And I'm like, I literally said to them, Tim, as we're doing the tug of war, I'm screaming at my kids with all the other families watching, all the other, parents and their daughters and sons. I go, stay in the fight. And I screamed, stay in the fight. And so they jump back on the rope and I dig in. And we start slowly reeling these high school boys back in to the point where we're yanking them and we're going boom. And I'm doing most of the work. Finally, we win. But I'm still in the moment of pulling this rope. I'm locked in. I want to embarrass these boys in front of all the kids. I give one more huge pull to finish it off. Really, step on the throat. Everybody lets go at that moment from the other team. I go flying back into the fence, like reeling back, like, whoa, like 3-4 feet. I'm falling back. I hit this fence. There's bolts in it right into my arm, cuts my arm all up. So the back of my arm and shoulder is all cut up. It's really funny. I'll slowly take my shirt off and show the viewers, but we won and I have the scars to prove it. It was a very proud moment in my life. Have you ever had that where you just, there's a moment.
Have I ever been proud of myself? Okay. Well, that story went in many different ways than I thought it was going to go. Cause you talk about the team effort, you have all five girls helping you. And at the end of it, you win and you talk about how proud you are of yourself. You think maybe you throw a bone or two to your daughters and.
Oh, we high fived, but I think everybody knew, who the MVP was, what I mean? It was
Did the boys know who you were?
No, I don't think so. I keep that pretty low, close to the vest, low profile here in town. So they don't really know. I have like a friend. He just found out I played hockey. I'll show it to the camera. So the bolt went in there and it just scraped all the way up. And I have something on my back too that hit me right here. And you can't get the depth of that. That bolt went right in. It was just like, and I'm trying to play it cool. I'm like rubbing my arm. Like, is it bleeding from my shirt? Way to take it too far, Dad. It's a party for 3-year-old kids. And I'm like trying to test myself versus high schoolers, but it felt good. Because my wife always, she gets upset at me because for a long time, I said my biggest dream, and it might still be, maybe, is to like run into a group of teenagers who are just jerks. You know what I mean? And just like just doing, they're doing naughty stuff. And I just clean their clocks, like a group of five of them. It's like Jack Reacher. When he meets those guys in the bar and he's like, better pay your tab. But I say it's like teenage boys.
You have a new punchline.
Better clean call your moms. It's so pathetic when you actually talk it through, but it's very, very funny. So that was the big, that happened yesterday. I was all jacked up. So it's fun. It was nice to get the body moving a little bit. The girls, they're like, "Dad, that was pretty cool." Anyways, you ever had a moment like that, Tim? I'm serious.
Have you ever won anything, Tim?
Were you just like surprised yourself? Because I thought we were going to lose. But once I dug in, I'm like, holy cheese, we're moving these kids. It was impressive.
Yeah, I'm sure that felt good. Especially to, you know, that they're embarrassed in front of the high school girls.
They were there.
You know the reason. So that's I'm sure that felt good.
Yes, it was very fun. Probably embarrassing for everybody involved. My daughter's teachers are like, holy cow, what's wrong with that guy? Stay in the fight.
Like, take it easy. Leonidas or something.
Yeah, the ice cream truck lady's like, what's wrong with that guy? he's got CTE, everybody. He's been hit a lot. That
to the local paper. Just so you know, I thought you might like the story. It's me, five little girls. We won the tug of war. Do you have room on the front page?
Oh, that's too funny. Good stuff. All right. Do you have anything to share, Tim, to the people?
No, nothing like that. No.
You just got done working out. That's exciting. What do you do when you go to the gym? What's on your list?
One of two things. I either go down to the weight room in my building. It's like a big apartment complex with a gym and a pool and all that. Or I do a kettlebell circuit in my apartment. That's what I did today. Yeah, like the cleans, lunges, squats, curls. These like the rows, like mixes of all those, and it's usually high intensity and a lot of reps. Yeah,
you should video that and show everybody what it looks like. That'd be a hell of a video. I would watch that. Do you do the ones where you start on your back, you lift it up first, and then you stand up, and those are hard.
Yeah, those are hard. Yeah, and that's the thing with like the kettlebell. They're expensive, so you buy one, try to figure out how many exercises you can do with the one weight. Because for some, it's a little bit heavy, but for others, it's a little bit light, but you got to do more reps and figure out what the right weight is to do as many things as you can with it.
Maximize the value. Very good. All right, let's get into the hockey because there was a couple games since we last spoke. Lo and behold, Tim, we got some series. 2-2 tie series, both series. Western Eastern Conference, the game last night, the Florida Panthers, New York Rangers. Very fun game to watch. All these games are turning into just must-watch hockey, and it seems like out east, it's the Igor Shesterkin show. He steals every single game, and Sergei Bobrovsky, not too bad himself. These goalies are putting on clinics every single night. Really good chances from both teams, and these guys are standing on their heads time and time again. And it happened again last night, Florida Panthers, New York Rangers. The Florida Panthers defeat the New York Rangers 3-2 to take a 3-2 series. Florida's up 3-2. That's right, sorry. They're up 3-2. I was mistaken. Dallas Edmonton is 2-2. What did you think of this game, Tim? Same script as before? Florida dominates, or was it something different?
A little bit different to start. I thought the Rangers were actually, they were okay, and they were definitely the better team in the first period. When you watch, like, the top two lines were clicking a little bit more. They were generating a little bit of offensive chances. They outshot the Panthers 11-8 in the first. Three of those were from Panarin. Lafreniere had a couple, like, you even saw Fox get a couple shots on net. So they were kind of moving around a little bit better. Couldn't get a whole lot sustained because of just the way Florida plays. And, of course, Bobrovsky making some big saves. But you do get the goal from Kreider. Forced a turnover, gets the breakaway. A little bit of a poke pass from Zibanejad. So I thought that was the sign of things to come, where the Rangers were kind of saying, hey, we're not going down without a fight. Our best players came back to be our best players. We're going to see a different team than you saw the last couple of games. But it didn't happen. It kind of switched after the first period. But the first one did go more New York's way, I think.
Yeah, they played better. You know, they had some jump in their step. They were at home. The home crowd was buzzing. It was an exciting start. Chris Kreider, obviously, he has the wheels. And he's no spring chicken. And to see him, what is it, like a block shot or whatever it was, to go from 0 to 100 miles an hour, it was impressive to watch. And he's not a small guy. So he got on his horse, gets the shorthanded goal. And I thought the same thing. I thought, here we go. The Rangers are finally going to have a good start and be the better team throughout this game. Then it just didn't happen. It just shifted. And the Florida Panthers slowly, systematically, and surely just got to their game. And it didn't happen in the first period. It happened in the second period. And the big thing, Gustav Forsling, Can we keep talking about him? Because it seems like every time there's a solid defensive play, a really high-end offensive play, he's right in the middle of most of them. And it happened again, but the play made was Sam Bennett. Everybody talks about this guy. He's punching Marshawn. He's always in the scrums. He hits. He's a pest. He's really good at what he does. He's a solid all-around power forward. The pass that he made to Gustav Forsling, that's Patrick Mahomes-esque. Looking off the defender, Adam Fox bit. He 100% bit. Bennett staring at, I think it's Zibanejad, the whole time. Reinhardt, so one of his other players, staring at him. Bennett sees this, cuts to the middle. Fox just bites, goes to that guy who he's staring at. Bennett just feeds to Forsling in the middle. Not a great shot by Gustav Forsling, but he just gets it on that backhand. Hard to kind of predict where it's going if you're Igor Shesterkin. There's no blade to read. Forsling just throws it on net. It looked like it went bar down initially.
Yep.
It was like, holy cow, that bar down is pretty impressive from the slot. But it hit his pad, came up, bar down. Or as Tim stupidly likes to put it in the agenda. And, you know, I think he puts these things out here to bother me because Tim does the agenda and then I go and tweak it and we kind of manage it. He puts bar south.
Yeah. You know, I could
lean that a term?
Even more. Tickle of a twine or talk about what happens during warmies, things like that. The hockey lingo, and I didn't obviously play juniors or like the where it kind of goes crazy, but a lot of that does bother me. Bar south's a good one. I'm okay with that one.
You know who bothers me now? PK Subban on TNT. I feel like he's really leaning into just being the cool guy. And like he's just talking like Mama Subban's peanut butter or something, like in the top shelf. And like he's teasing Messier yesterday. You think Gretz can do this? Gretz. And Messi's like, shut up. Like, stop talking. Messier doesn't even acknowledge him. And Subban's in the background going, hey, congrats, do this. Congrats. Hey, Mess. Congrats. Gretz, do this. Can Gretzky do this? And it's like your little kid tugging on your coat. Like, Dad, look at me. Look at me. I'm like, get out. Like, no. Have patience. Wait your turn. And that's what Subban's like with Marc Messier. It's crazy. But anyways, Forsling scores that goal. And it's not surprising that the Rangers start fast and the Panthers start slow because this – I went and dug this up. The Florida Panthers have scored 53 goals total in this year's playoffs. That's power play, that's penalty kill, that's shorthanded. Total goals in the first period, Tim. They've got nine. Nine goals in the first period. They've played, I want to say, 17 or 18 games. They're terrible starts. Yeah, the whole playoffs. They're terrible in the first period. For whatever reason, they take a long time to get to their game and to get down to business. Maybe they like playing, you know, from behind. They like that challenge. Whatever the reason, they stink in the first. They always chase the game in the first period. The second period, they get a little better. They score 19 goals in the second. The third period, almost half of all their goals this postseason come in the third period or overtime. 25 goals. They've only scored 53. So it's damn near half their goals come in third period or overtime. 23 are in the third. Two are in overtime. So these guys, they're like a locomotive. It takes a little time. You know, you gotta get the wheels oiled up a little bit. Speaking of that, my van, the AC went out and I was working on it last night. I was like, okay, I got the Freon. I was going to charge the system and I'm out there. I'm like, damn, why isn't this not taking the charge? Why is not the fitting's not going on? Checking the bottle, checking the charge, checking the pressure. Everything's up to the task. And I realized my stupid AC condenser is not working. My clutch isn't engaging. We're doing
good
a
time
long
of year for that, huh?
We're taking a long road trip in 2 weeks, and the temperature is going to be around 100 degrees. I'm going to pack eight kids in this van with no AC, and we're bringing their good friend along, the girls, because we're going to like a choir camp in Wisconsin. I can't subject these kids to 100 degree heat, so I'm going to have to either get it fixed, hopefully, or rent a new vehicle, which is always fun. Anyways, moving on. So yeah, the Rangers are slow starters. Excuse me, I'm all out of sorts here.
the Panthers. And I think one of the signs of a good team is that you get better as the game goes on, as the series go on. It's like the bigger moments, they want the puck on their stick. They're able to stay focused and stay in their game. And a lot of that, like talent only gets you so far. I know it sounds like a cliche, but like the big moments, the overtimes, the third periods, so much of that is coaching and so much of that is what's between the ears for the players.
Yeah.
Like the Rangers have talent too. And I don't want to bash the Rangers. They've won a couple playoff rounds. Like they're a good team. They're still in the series, but like Toronto, right? You know, that the series gets going and they seem to shrink. And so Florida just, they want it. They don't even seem fazed by the fact that they're usually down a goal after the first period or tied. Like, they don't care. They know they're going to get the better chances. In the second and third period, they outshot them 29-16. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the chances, and not the stat we mentioned on Wednesday in games 3 and 4. It was just like triple the shot attempts, the block shots, like everything. And yeah, just Florida deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, creating turnovers. The Rangers had 12 giveaways last game to Florida's one. Like, that's an amazing stat there. To give the puck over that much, to just give the teams free chances. And let's stay on Gustav Forsling a little bit. He has the most 5-on-5 points, Tim, of anybody in this series. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Talent up and down the board. He is absolutely asserting his dominance. When you got Montour, when you got Fox, when you got Ekblad, when you have Miller, you have all these high-end defensemen. Everybody's talking about Gustav Forsling. Rightfully so. He's fantastic. Where did he come from?
Yeah, this is the crazy part. Because even going back to last year, he was probably the fourth defenseman on their roster. Because we all talked about Ekblad. He's basically their do-it-all defenseman. Montour was their breakout last year.
Yep.
And they had Uyghur. And so Forsling was like, you know, on any given night he can play well, but he was not the top guy. He was drafted I think 2017 or 18 by Vancouver. Never signed with them. Rights were traded to Chicago. They signed him. Then traded him to Carolina for Calvin DeHaan and some other no-name guy. And he was waived by Carolina in 2021 during part of the lockout restriction thing.
Yep.
Claimed immediately by the Panthers, who immediately signed him to a 3-year deal because they knew he was a good player. And then just in March, 2 months ago, they extended him for 8 years at 5.75 per. He probably cost himself $15 million by signing the contract early, just because he'd be making lot more. He might have even played himself out of Florida if he hadn't signed until this summer. So he's just looking like an incredible contract, and he keeps getting better.
So confident. You know what I mean? Like, the moment is not too big for him, and he just jumps up in the rush. He's back. He's defending. He's so incredible. And I know we're blowing smoke. He's a 27-year-old kid. Like,
he's good.
Typically undrafted, right? Because he didn't even sign with Vancouver. So good for him coming out of Sweden. It's exciting. But then you look at the teams who he left. It's like, gosh, he looked pretty good in Chicago right now. You know what I mean? Gosh, you know, Vancouver would love to get their hands on him. Carolina's got enough defensemen. But that's the scouts who claimed him from Florida, they must have just been licking their chops. Like, they just imagine. And then to sign him right away to a 3-year deal, that's not normal. To pick a guy up on waivers and assign him right away to a 3-year deal. So good for Florida. They need it because he's playing fantastic. And then let's on the other side of the page, people stepping up for Florida, embracing the moment, star players doing what they do. Sam Bennett, Keith Tkachuk, Sam Reinhart, these types of players, Carter Verhaeghe, Sasha Barkov playing incredible. What a true number one center looks like, Sasha Barkov. You know what I mean? Lugging the puck through the middle, not making mistakes, embracing the moment, getting grade A chances, making people around you better. That's what a 1C does. And to win a Stanley Cup, I've said it for years. People mock me. People, you know, make fun of me. Strong down the middle. You need guys who you can rely on. Go win me that draw. Go lock down the other team's top line center. Go be a top line center and facilitate for your scoring wingers, because that's how the league works these days. High-end scoring wingers. Get them the puck. Florida has that. Sasha Barkov. The Rangers thought they had that. And Mika Zibanejad. Well, not so much. This guy is, like, it's tough to say because the whole season, I think the writing's been on the wall with this team. This team, their first line setter is really Vincent Trocheck, but they trot out Mika Zibanejad every game. They give him first power play minutes. He starts all the games. He plays with Kreider and Hedl and whoever else they put up there. He gets the most minutes. He's not a 1C. He gets paid like a 1C. But he's not. And I think he's getting exposed big time right now. Hugely in this series, because you can see what Sasha Barkov is doing. He's having his way with Mika Zibanejad. They're getting zone time. They're skating circles around this line. It's embarrassing for a team that's a President's Trophy winner to come in here and just, like, he's chasing the game, Tim. He's absolutely chasing the game. And he didn't cost them the game last night, but he sure as hell didn't help. And he just got the empty net goal was where everybody's talking about him getting exposed. Horrendous sequence for him. But talk about all the stuff that led up to it. What happened in game 4, Tim, with him?
Yeah, we talked about this on, I think, on Wednesday's show, where it was overtime. Blake Wheeler's out there, which is what is he even doing in overtime anyway? But Zibanejad makes a bad pass at his, at the offensive blue line, tries to go D to D. It gets broken up, forces a rush, and Wheeler has to take a penalty. They end up scoring on the power play. The Panthers do to win the game. And so everyone's mad at, not at Wheeler, at Zibanejad for creating that situation. Last night, you're down by one. Empty net, like a minute and a half to go. And it was like, it's the Mitch Marner-esque level of effort where he gets puck turned over. He gets stood up. He gets beat by, was it Bennett or maybe the guy before him? I think it was Bennett. Yeah, he gets
Bennett
beat
twice,
by Bennett.
Yeah.
You know, like almost like punched in the face because he doesn't know what to do. And then he doesn't back check hard. And I don't know that he would have for sure gotten back to break up the play, but I know that he didn't try, you know? And so just two or three in a row in 10 seconds where he just looked really, really bad and low effort, much like what we've seen from guys like Mitch Marner, or even like Pierre-Luc Dubois level left. And even in a friend of the show, he's been great lately, but remember a couple of years ago, those clips of JT Miller floating around where he just wasn't chasing the puck. It was like that. And except you're doing it in not overtime, but end of a close game in the playoffs. It's just unacceptable.
Yeah. That doesn't bother me. The chase down. It's the first two battles where he just gives up, just cedes the battle. The first one on the blue line, when they're in the offensive zone, he could have went after the puck and been the first guy to the puck, but he decides to try to seal the boards. That didn't work. Puck comes out of the zone. He's lollygagging back up, trying to find the puck. That's fine. It's the second battle with Sam Bennett that everybody's up in arms, and I don't blame him. This is your guy. Because of Benajad, he makes a ton of money. He just lets Sam Bennett get the puck, and then he tries to draw a penalty. It's just embarrassing. That's the part that makes it worse. He's like, oh, you hit me in the head. And he flings his head back and he does the whole production. It's like, come on, man. Do you really want that puck? Do you? Because it sure as hell doesn't look. It made me think of, do you remember? You probably do. It was the early 2000s. Alexei Kovalev for the Montreal Canadiens playing the Boston Bruins in the playoffs in overtime. Glenn Murray just gives him a little slash on his hand. Kovalev shakes his hand. He does this. He goes down. Puck's laying there. Sheldon Surrey tries to grab it. Kovalev hits Sheldon Surrey. Glenn Murray grabs the puck and goes in and scores on Jose Theodore. I was a big Bruins fan. I remember distinctly sitting in a bar eating chicken wings watching that goal, and it was hilarious because everybody thought, what is Kovalev doing? Like a 50-goal scorer, just trying to milk a penalty. It reminded me of that. It's just that pathetic where it's like, really? This is what we're doing here. So not a good look for Mika Zibanejad. He's been this way all year. He is slowly, slowly declining. And I think everyone's just realizing it. The Florida Panthers do this to teams. They grind you down. They hit you every time you get the puck. So in the back of your head, like, I'm not touching that puck. I'm not going to get hit. And that's not even the worst thing with this guy. The power play, he sucks. Every one time where this guy thinks he's got a 110 mile an hour cannon. Every time he gets to pass on that wing, he's ripping shots. He could be at the blue line, Tim, taking one-timers, and they never hit the net. They go sailing wide. The Panthers corral the puck and throw it down. He is killing their power play. Absolutely killing it. No effort, can't hit the net. What good are you for the team? No good at all. No good at all. The only players I really see trying hard for the New York Rangers right now, obviously Trocheck. He's playing lights out. Goodrow is noticeable when he hits the ice. Cooley, love that guy. That fourth line, Cooley, Goodrow, whoever they ride shotgun with them. I think Rempe, they don't play him enough.
He plays like useless. 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. He's got to go. Get someone in there who's going to, if you're not going to play him, let him go. I like Lafreniere, how he's been playing. Roslovic and Wennberg. Those guys are making, you know, they're noticeable out there.
Yeah, I would throw Lindgren in there too. He's putting in.
I was doing more forwards, but yeah.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah, it's a fair point. One of the things that makes this more obvious is that the effort, and this is even, you're seeing some conversations about Florida's conditioning. They're just relentless. They seem like they're in better shape than the Rangers, similar to Dallas, where it's just line after line of just forecheck and skill, and they're going to throw the body, and you get hit every time you touch the puck. Florida's, it's exhausting to play them, not to mention all the stuff they do between the whistles and, you know, the drawing the penalties. They're so good. They're so good. And now they're heading back to Florida with a chance to win it at home.
Isn't it funny how perception and just reality changes just when the teams drop the puck? Because before the series, like, Rangers are going to be good. The power play is going to be incredible. Their special teams, their goaltending, it's lights out. Once that power play gets quieted down a little bit, They're a subpar 5-on-5 team. That's the one thing we said coming into this playoffs. This Rangers team is not good 5-on-5. Their power play has carried them throughout the season in the early parts of this playoffs. And lo and behold, what happens when the power play is not there? Pretty pedestrian team. So we'll see if they can pick it up. I hope they do, but they're still not scoring on the power play. They get a shorthanded goal from Kreider, and that's about it. One last gasp by Lafreniere, a nice tip. But other than that, it was not much to show for the New York Rangers. And then the one constant, Igor Shesterkin stood on his head again. Incredible. Absolutely incredible saves. He's the reason they're there, but we'll see. It's 3-2. They have to win two more games to get to the Stanley Cup Finals, so good for them. All right, let's move out east, Tim. This series is 2-2. Tell me about the Oilers Stars. The Oilers came back, big win. How did they do it?
Yeah, huge win, because everyone was, you know, everything was going Dallas's way after game three. You kind of think the level of effort, the play from like Darnell Nurse and Stuart Skinner and all the easy targets that we like to pick on, and things look pretty bleak for Edmonton. You make a few lineup changes, and I think you have to give a lot of credit to Chris Knobloch for doing that. They pulls Desharnais out. You put Corey Perry back in. Like, there's different guys in the lineup that shake things up, that jumble the lines, that kind of send a message, and insert a little bit of energy, I think, that was really important. And that was definitely a risky move by him, but it paid off. But the game started scary. You mentioned this already. Like, Wyatt Johnson, stop me if you've heard this before, scores on a rush. Beautiful goal, although I think you want Skinner to stop that one. He was far enough out, and the puck doesn't even touch the puck. And then Lindell, which was a weird redirect off Darnell Nurse's butt.
Behind.
Opened the scoring, and both of those goals are in the first 5.5 minutes in the first period. And you think, here we go again. And they did a little pan shot to the crowd, and people are like giving the yank, like they want Skinner out, they want Darnell Nurse out, they're pull the goalie, whatever. Things are looking bad. But then after that point on, it's just nothing but Edmonton. They scored 5 straight goals, including the empty net goal. We can break some of them down, but huge bounce back effort for them to tie the series up. And, you know, it caught me by surprise.
Yeah, I was ready for a Dallas rout because Skinner, I don't think he's at fault for any of those goals. That Wyatt Johnson shot was pretty solid. And the one up Nurse's butt, what are you going to do there? But then the play that really made the difference for me is Dallas is still pressuring after those two goals. They're hounding the Edmonton Oilers. They're all over them. Skinner makes a massive save on Tyler Seguin. In front of the net, Seguin gets his, you know, stick on a rebound, backhand, and Skinner just gets lucky. It hits him. There's a whole open net to shoot at, and Seguin just throws it into Skinner's blocker, and it goes wide. That was huge for the Edmonton Oilers. If they go down 3-0 there, I think it's lights out, game over. Dallas is really good at holding a lead, but it didn't. It was 2-0. Edmonton slowly gets to their game. They were faster. I think the addition of McLeod, you know, Corey Perry, obviously a huge part of the first goal. McLeod picks up the rebound, and Ryan Suter, what are we doing here? This falls into Ottinger. It's such a strange goal for McLeod, because it should not have happened whatsoever. It was just very avoidable. But they get on their horse and they win. And they, I don't want to say dominate the next two periods, but control.
Yeah.
They controlled the pace of the play. They were throwing more pucks at the other team's net, and they were the better team. So it's such a strange series where Dallas dominates game three, the second and third period, and you think that's going to continue going forward, but all of a sudden it just takes a couple plays and Edmonton starts thinking that they're the better team, and away we go. And they really do just take it to the Dallas Stars for the next few periods, and they win 5-2 going away. Good additions by Perry. I like how Evan Bouchard played. Corey Perry doesn't score. I mean, Connor McDavid doesn't score, but he plays really well. Leon Draisaitl gets on the board. 3 assists.
3 apples, John. 3 apples, as the kids like to say.
Empty net or whatever. Who cares? But very, very, very good game by the Edmonton Oilers. Now we go back to Dallas for a best of three. And who has the momentum? I don't know. It's such a strange series to call. Every game has these momentum changes where it's one team goes up, you come back, you don't know what's going to happen. But the big news, I think, coming out of this game is Chris Tanev. Monumental implications from this guy. He's seen in a walking boot in the airport in Edmonton, because these guys have to go through customs. You can't just take a private jet like you do in every other city in the United States. You have to go through customs. He was seen in the concourse. Not good. He blocked a shot early in the game. I think it was a Draisaitl shot. So if he's out and the Dallas Stars have to resort to pretty much 4 defensemen, that bumps Ryan Suter up. Not good. They already work these top 5 guys so incredibly much. And if you lose Tanev, there aren't a lot of guys on this roster because they're so deep that I would be like, if you lose him, you're in trouble. Tanev is one of them. He has been arguably their best defenseman throughout this playoff. Heiskanen didn't look good last game. I'll say this. There was a couple battles that directly led to goals where he just didn't show up. The first goal with him and Hyman in the neutral zone, Hyman just boxes him out, the puck goes right by him. There's another goal where he got made a misplay and that ends up in the back of his net. So Heiskanen should bounce back. But if you lose Tanev, Tim, how does this affect the Dallas Stars?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, and I was reading about him, trying to look just right now while you were talking to see if there's an update. But basically, DeBoer said that there was no news yet. They're preparing to play without him. It's a big blow, obviously, if he's not there. But he was kind of noncommittal in his response, and he didn't really know a ton yet. So this is going to be like a day-by-day, hour-by-hour situation. And here's the thing. Even if he does play, how much are you going to get from him? You know, even if he's good enough to be in the lineup, like, yeah, can you rely on him? Can he play that shutdown role? Is he just there to eat some minutes? And he's your fifth defenseman, you know what I mean? He's probably still better than what's his name. But yeah, I don't know. This you have to lean a lot more on Hakanpää and Heiskanen. Harley. Yeah, those big defensemen. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see if he plays.
Yeah, Lindell and Heiskanen are going to buckle up and play about 32 minutes. And yeah, Harley will have to pick up his game. But these guys, they already play an incredible amount of minutes. So I don't know how much more they can take. It harkens back to, well, when I played with the Blackhawks, when I was playing defense, I told Dunks and Keith and, you know, Soupy, I'm like, get ready because I'm playing defense. So you guys are going to get a lot of minutes because I'm only playing 6 to 7. So good luck, fellas. And they held in there. But boy, oh boy, you're playing the Edmonton Oilers who are zipping around the ice. That's going to be tough. And Chris Tanev is so good with the stick, so good positionally, so good just being physical on their top guys. That's a huge, it's huge. That's, his loss, I think, is bigger than any forward being down. I think it's bigger than anybody, maybe Miro Heiskanen or Ottinger. Those are the only other two guys who would have this big of an impact. So hopefully he's back, because if he's not, the meter for odds might tip to the Edmonton Oilers. You know, McDavid's like, yeah, let's go. Let's get him out of here. All right, Tim, moving on. Let's get some quick hits.
Yeah, just not a ton here today, but I was looking a little bit into the trade talks. And our friend of the show, Frank Saravelli, does his, you know, top trade targets. And I think it's fun just to tease these out a little bit. We'll obviously cover these more in depth over the summer as we approach free agency and all that July 1st. But the top five trade candidates this year in terms of skill and also just likelihood to be traded. Number five, Nikolaj Ehlers. Number four, Martin Nikitas, which I think is an obvious one. He's not going to be able to sign. Three, Chychrun. They've got three or four defensemen that they just it's really log jam. They need to try to get rid of one of them. It's not going to be Sanderson. You just signed him. It's not going to be Shabbat because no one's going to want to take him. So Chychrun's probably going to be the one that gets moved. Two, Ullmark, obvious reason. Swayman's your guy. You're going to need to free up that cap space. And number one, Mitch Marner. And he does think, you know, he's one of the few I've seen, because most people say he's going to be back. Marner's not going to waive his no move clause. And Frank acknowledges that, but he also thinks that it's probably likely that he gets asked to move it. And I don't know how many players want to play somewhere where they're not wanted. So I think it's a fair question to ask, and we'll talk about this more as the story develops.
Yeah, there's some big names. What might kind of thwart this a little bit is there are some actually legit guys who are UFAs this year. Years past, that number kind of isn't as high, or the players aren't as good. Most people get locked up for long term, but there's some. Like Sam Reinhart is a UFA. The guy put 57 goals in. Steven Stamkos, Jake Guentzel, Tyler Bertuzzi, Toivo Teravainen. There's some talent out there where GMs might, well, I don't have to trade for somebody. I can just go and sign somebody. So that might dissuade somebody from going after Mitch Marner when you can get a Sam Reinhart. But yeah, there are some good players. That's going to be fun. It actually, watching this playoff round and seeing Kyle Okposo going out there and them talking about how he hasn't made the playoffs and this and that. And, you know, this is only the fourth or fifth time he's made the playoffs in his 17-year career. Obviously, the Buffalo Sabres happened. It just got me wondering, is it worth it to sign a big ticket? You know what I mean? Sign with that team for more money, knowing you're just going to be in a losing environment for your whole career. Whatever the situation is, do you want to sign in Arizona long-term? Do you want to sign in Buffalo long-term? Do you want to sign in these cities where you know you probably won't win? Or how much money would you sacrifice to be in a winning environment, right? So I think if you ask a player early on, they just go for the bag. But if you ask them you know, probably 3-4 years into that contract. Do you regret signing here? Like a Poso or a Skinner or somebody. Hey, would you maybe take $10 million less so you can go play with Colorado?
Well, how much do you think winning, like for the guys that win the cup before they turn, you know, really early, 23, 24, 25, how much does that impact? Because I know you want to win as many as possible, but winning one, having your name on there, getting the monkey off your back, I would think it becomes less about the chase at that point, whether or not they even want to admit that to themselves. But like, I've got my ring, now let's go make as much money as we can and have a good career versus the guys that never want it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's getting that cup is key, because if you don't have it, then you end up like you chase the cup at the end of your career and teams don't really, and you embarrass your reputation. You tarnish it a little bit.
I love those stories of guys like Tyler Seguin won it at 19. Yeah. And he's like, this is great. The NHL is amazing. I'm having so much fun. And he's like, you don't really realize at 19 how hard it is. You think you're going to come back every year or every couple of years, and he hasn't been back. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's the hardest trophy to win in sports, I think.
I think so too, with the toll it takes on your body. And the hockey is such a parody. They're very rare. You have like a Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs, where it's just year after year after year of success, and you know you can lock them in for the Super Bowl. Hockey's not like that. A little bit. Like, but there's definitely a group of teams that you want to be on. So if I'm a Jake Guentzel or if I'm a Sam Reinhart, I know I'm signing an 8-year deal. I know it's going to be $8-9 million. Do I just, you know, go for the biggest bag possible? If I'm Jake Guentzel and I go, oh, the Sabres got a lot of money. They got a pretty good roster. Should I go there? Or do I take $3 million less per year and I'm still making $80 million, $70 million and go play somewhere incredible, Tampa Bay, or go play in Colorado, or go play in even a team like Nashville? You know, they're up and coming. They're going to be good. So I don't know how much it would be interesting to pick the brain of one of these guys. See where they sit right now, because there's a lot of money that's going to be handed out once free agency hits, and it's just, I don't know, I've just been thinking about it lately. It's not
speaking
important.
Of Buffalo, let me just read this real quick. This is floating around. This is their lineup card from 2017, and just like a glimpse into their past, and you only missed this by a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. First line, Evander, Ryan O'Reilly, Brian Gionta. Second line, Tyler Ennis, Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart. Third line, William Carrier, Evan Rodriguez, Alex Nylander. Fourth line, DeLaurier, Gergensen's, Matt Molson. Not bad. First pair, Kulikov, Risto. Second, McCabe, Zach Bogosian. Third pair, Josh Georges, Cody Franzen. And between the pipes, Linus Ullmark. Like, that should have been...
That's not bad.
That should have been the beginnings of a solid team. And every single one of those guys went on to play their best hockey for other organizations, which is just... That's tough.
Get rid of Gionta on the first line. Like, that's a solid lineup. That's very solid. The Sabres just, as much as I love them, and they just say someone cursed them or hexed them. I don't know what it is. They just can't figure it out. Good players, good individual seasons, just can't. Much like the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah. Last thing here. Just the playoff schedule drop for the Stanley Cup Finals. And I think this is interesting because they released every game already, which I guess makes sense because, you know, it's important. But Saturday, June 8th is going to be game one. So these teams will have a little bit of rest, which they usually do before the finals start. And then the second game is June 10th. And then there's a 3-day break, June 13th, 2-day, 15th, 3 days again, the 18th, 3 days again, the 21st, 3 days again, the 24th. This is scheduled out and stretched out to almost the entire month of June, where these teams might only get like 8 weeks of a summer. In an off season, which is not nearly enough. Have you ever seen it go this late before?
It keeps getting pushed back more and more and more with the mandatory breaks.
The start of the season.
Yeah, mandatory breaks that teams have. They have those 10 days off, and then you have obviously this year they're going to do the World Cup again. So it is what it is. And then the 3-day breaks are for the travel days. So they give them one extra day of travel, then they have an off day at home, and then they play the game. So yeah, it sucks. Like, I'm going on a trip with my family on the 16th. So like, we're going to have to figure something out. Hopefully it's a sweep. But boy, oh boy, I will be taping this show in a hotel room with 8 girls and my wife, who was pregnant with probably another girl. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great.
Stay in the fight, John. Oh, with all that being said, thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. Have yourself a good weekend. We'll talk to you guys on Monday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.